bi-monthly board meeting on March 9th, 2016. Karen, well, Celia, let's do a roll call first. Maybe I'll go in order tonight.
Director Angelo?
Here.
Director Blackburn?
Here.
Director Guerrero?
Here.
Vice President White?
Here.
President Lucy?
Here. Thank you. And Karen, can I ask you to lead us in a flag salute?
Attention. Salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Does anybody have any changes, additions? You don't like the order? You like the order? I'll entertain a motion.
Move to approve this agenda.
Okay.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, so this is the format we're going with. Public comment. This is for items that are not on the agenda tonight, so if anybody would like to do public comment for items that are not on the agenda, which is a lot of items, please step up now. Okay, hearing none, we'll move right in to special presentations. And now I'm going to go out of order and ask Chief Lieberman to step up to the podium. How are you tonight, sir?
That was magical. Thank you.
That's right. Things work the way they're supposed to.
Good evening, President and Board. I'm Steve Lieberman, your Fire Chief with the Five Cities Fire Authority. And I wanted to pop in and kind of give you an update to where we are mid-fiscal year. I'm going to touch on a few items, and obviously would love to entertain any questions you may have along the way. We're going to talk about our responses, public education, our outreach and preparedness. We're going to talk about 2015 using some metrics on response numbers. Going to take you through an update on some of our goals and objectives from our current budget work program, give you a quick snapshot of our mid-year budget status, and then just wrap up. Shouldn't be more than 45 minutes to an hour.
Great.
Kidding.
Remember, it's Oceano.
So, busy year, variety of tasks. You know, fire departments are often referred to as all hazards, emergency services agencies, and we've certainly responded to a variety of incidents, whether it's car accidents, high-angle rescues out of the creeks, structure fires, vegetation fires, the campaign fires, mainly in Northern California, and a lot of vehicle accidents and medical aids. Really focus on public education and outreach. As some of you may recall, we had our first annual fire prevention and life safety event at the Ramona Garden Park last October. We had a bunch of partners from law enforcement, fire, the ambulance company, all there, and it was a great event, and we're looking to build upon it in this coming year. But with that said, throughout the year, we're working with community groups on fire extinguisher training, hands-only CPR training, and working with children on fire and life safety. And some of these photos are just really focusing on kids not being afraid should they see a firefighter in personal protective equipment, because they look more like monsters than a normal daily basis. So, did a community outreach, supported the Alyssa Ann Rouge Burn Foundation Relay, and we continue to do this throughout the year. So awareness and preparedness. This is something we've really worked on in conjunction with the launch of our social media campaign. I'm grateful that it rained before I got to see you, because we've done a lot of work on El Nino planning, and we're hoping that there's more rain. But nonetheless, we prepared. We worked with our partner agencies, whether it was public works agencies, law enforcement agencies, nonprofits, the Homeless Coalition, to plan for the event of a major rain event. We use social media to push information out to the communities, whether it was a flash flood advisory, just as redundant communications to help people prepare for the event. I was on a cable television show with Mr. Guerrero. He looked far more fabulous than I did on camera.
And California Edition. That was this show.
California Edition. So just some of our activity
and
metrics.
I appreciate you coming on that. That was
Thank you for having me. So our activity metrics, you've seen this chart before with the orange, green, and blue headers, and I know it's an IA chart right now, but if you look to the right of it, you'll see the summary information. So in 2015, 16, we responded to 3,311 calls for service, which is an 8% year-over-year increase from the prior year. The way this chart was organized last year is the orange section shows responses by community, and the next block in that blue box shows Arroyo Grande had roughly 52% of the total response, followed by Grover Beach at 32% and Oceano at 16%. In the green area, we actually use our districts, so where the fire stations are, without any worry of community jurisdictional boundaries, we want to send the closest resource to that call for service. And what's interesting is it shows that we're doing that well. While Arroyo Grande had 52% of the call volume, if you look at Station 1, which is in Arroyo Grande, that station responded 36.6% of the time. So Station 2 in Grover Beach and Station 3 in Oceano are certainly flowing across jurisdictional boundaries to back up each community. Lastly, the blue box is our automatic and mutual aid response, predominantly with CAL FIRE, and that was about 400 more calls, which is roughly, you know, we're getting up to 10% additional call volume. As I'll talk about in the presentation, one of our budget objectives was to look at and potentially revise that automatic aid agreement, which would reduce our response outside of our district, keeping our resources available for those additional calls within our communities. We took a look at what we'll call hotspots. We all had an idea of where we respond to most frequently, but we wanted to use data to really determine what our hotspot activity was. And engineer Mark Searby did a fabulous job of culling the information and putting this report together. In summary, if you look at by community, Arroyo Grande had 80% of the top 5 hotspots or most frequently responded to locations, and 55% of the top 20. And you can follow down seeing Grover at 20% and Oceano having 20% of the top 20. Obviously I have the details, but when you look at the list, and it did confirm our suspicions in that Arroyo Grande has done a fabulous job of planning for senior citizen residential housing and care facilities. As we get older, our medical conditions become more of a challenge, and we need more assistance. So most of the facilities in Arroyo Grande that made the list were those senior residences. Arroyo Grande High School came in about number 6. And I'm pleased to report that Lucia Mars is investing a lot of funding into updating their fire alarm system. So I hope to see Arroyo Grande High School drop off the list next year. Grover Beach, again, we're talking about homelessness and shelter crises. Grover Beach, it was Ramona Garden Park. And I'm not quite sure where this metric will be next year now that that encampment's been relocated away from the train station, but that was the hit in Grover Beach. Oceano's 20% showing in the top 20 was really the mobile home parks along Highway 1, very similar to the situation in Arroyo Grande. So goals and objectives for the budget work plan. Strategic plan. The framework is completed for the strategic plan, and we're really fortunate to have hired an outside facilitator who's going to run us through the process April 20th and 21st. It's an organization from out of the county, and I'm really pleased to report that they're going to honor our budgeted allocation of $5,000 to complete the facilitation. The automatic aid and mutual aid agreement I touched on earlier, that final revision, Chief Heath, and Chief Paul Lee and Jeff Money with CAL FIRE and I sat down and really went through this document. It's in front of Acting Chief Steve Reeder right now for signature, and then it will come to me. I hope to implement the changes by the end of March. That should drastically reduce our responses outside of the districts for medical aid calls, but still keeping us as a viable partner to help them with fires, whether they're structural wetland fires and major traffic collisions. We're always available as a mutual aid request, but we won't automatically leave the districts to a large extent. The last bullet, reviewing and revising the current JPA agreement document. I know that Vice President White has talked to you about this, and she has a binder, as does Mr. Ogren. We are asking, now that it's been 5 years, to really take a look at the JPA document. And we've given two term sheets, Term Sheet A and Term Sheet B. Term A I would call cleanup language, or you could call it low-hanging fruit opportunities to revise the JPA document. And Term Sheet B is the big stuff. It's the funding formulas and allocations. We are looking to, because, well, let me stop. The JPA document is written in such a fashion that any change to the agreement has to be signed off by the host communities. So the board members can't approve those changes. And it's got to be a unanimous vote to make changes to the JPA document the way it's currently written. So we're asking our board members to bring that binder and place in a discussion on your agendas in the future. I will be present to support our board members, as will David Hale, our legal counsel. And we will help you facilitate that discussion. And then the board members will bring the feedback back at a future date. Arroyo Grande does have their report scheduled for April 12th. Grant opportunities. We've done, our fingers are crossed. We're looking really good for a very large grant through the Assistance for Firefighter grant program for breathing apparatus. Vital piece of equipment. It's got about a 10-year life, and it's a $500,000 investment. We meet all the criteria for the grant, and if we're awarded, we'll have a 10% copay of the $480,000.
Great.
Structural firefighting clothing, the helmets and the fire and the bunker jackets and bunker pants. We're looking at replacing that equipment for the crews assigned here at Station 3. It's a $29,000 work program. We've been awarded $4,000 in grant funding through the state. We're waiting to hear from a USDA grant, which will provide us another $17,000, which would mean our out-of-pocket would be $8,000 on a $29,000 cost. So we're optimistic. We're going to hear any day from USDA. Master fee schedule. When the JPA was put together 5 years ago, there wasn't a consistent movement in fees that are collected by the Five Cities Fire Authority for work performed, meaning fire inspections, multifamily dwelling inspections. It varies by community. So we're working on bringing that in to a consistent basis and then working with a third-party provider potentially for cost recovery, which will help offset the actual cost for the work provided. We've updated the website. Like I mentioned, we launched a social media campaign with Twitter and Facebook feeds that are posting to our website, and they're also available, obviously, to subscribers. In the short period that we've been live, we have over 200 subscribers, and the news media is following us closely. So in the days of us having to kick press releases on a more routine basis, now the media is looking at the Twitter feed and calling us with questions. I want to take a moment because I'm really excited about this application that's about to launch. As I told you during our last meeting, when we talked about our work program, we wanted to develop a smartphone application. And an Arroyo Grande resident, who's also a captain with the Santa Barbara County Fire Department, developed this application for Santa Barbara County, which he's offered to the Five Cities Fire Authority. It's a great application for our first responders to make them quicker on their reflex time, to get that call information out on a smartphone before the radio tones even go off so we can start moving towards responding towards that call. It's got a lot of other valuable resources as well. But when Craig and I were talking about this, I said, I want to give a version to the community. I want a public-facing version as well. And we're really close to launching. I'm hoping it's before the end of the month. It's been approved by Apple. We just need to drop it into the Apple Store. I just want to give you some highlights of some of the things it does. So I know it's tough to see, but if you download the application, you can decide to opt in for push notifications. So if you've got a phone, sometimes you see news briefs or a Twitter feed or something come across your phone. If you opt in for those notifications on a routine basis, you'll be alerted to when we've uploaded new public education information to the system. But if we're having a critical event, it gives us yet one more path to reach out to the community to say, there's been a hazardous materials release, shelter in place in these areas, or hey, there's a flash flood advisory for the next 2 hours in this affected area. So we're really excited to have that capability. But going back to routine day-to-day basis, you have the device, you press the selections to get into the tabs, and you can see there's a whole list of options for preparedness tips. So it's burn prevention and scald injury prevention month. You press the tab, a document loads, you can see it on the far right with tips on how to reduce the risk in your home. So great information, again, available at no cost to our communities. Besides that, we wanted to be able to show people what we do. So we're going to have a call log, a real-time call log, showing engines what type of call they're responding to, which community, and the name of the street. So obviously we can't show any information that would be HIPAA-restricted. We're not going to say what they're responding to or the person's name or age or gender or any of that. We're not going to give you the physical street address, but you will be able to see what Five Cities Fire is responding to on a daily basis. In the middle is a handy tip for me. It's a feed to the San Luis Obispo County CHP feed. So if you're leaving town and you want to check traffic conditions, this is a fabulous tool that'll be built into the application. Lastly, our social networking will be built inside the application, so you won't have to jump into Twitter or Facebook to see what's going on with us. So again, excited, coming soon. We'll really do a good job of trying to get the word out to the communities. Again, Craig is an iOS developer, which is Apple code. So unfortunately, it's going to be limited to folks that have Apple devices when it launches. But still a fabulous solution. Mid-year budget status. Overall, we're tracking really well with our spending patterns. We're right where we should be at this time of year with our existing budgeted funds. I wanted to bring up a couple of items for you. One of them is strike team reimbursement. When I started in December of last year, I kept hearing, well, when we go out on these strike teams, we always recover our costs. Well, that sounded great, but I wanted to trust yet verify that we truly were doing that. So working with our accounting people, we set up an accounting and tracking system, and I'm proud to report to you that we can show you that our reimbursement is more than covering our direct out-of-pocket costs. The additional reimbursement covers staff administrative time, and they reimburse us for the vehicles when we send one of our vehicles. So good news there. Vehicle maintenance. I've talked to you about the age of our fleet. I am proud to report that I've got confirmation from Pierce. They received our order for the replacement fire engine. It's a 330-day build time at the factory, at which point they'll drive it west from Wisconsin to a service center where I'm sure they're going to have to do some final tweaks from what they've noticed on the road test, and then our folks will do acceptance testing to make sure it meets pump standards and all of those things. So about a year out, but we'll have the first of the new engines. In the meantime, with the fleet in the age that it's at, we've expended 93% of our maintenance line item as of February. So it's something that, you know, is concerning, but unfortunately not unexpected. So we're keeping an eye on that as well. So efficiencies. When I got there, I was looking at the support fleet and worked with staff to really take a look at our non-fire suppression and response equipment, whether it was command vehicles, the pickups, the Ford Taurus that sits at Station 3, for example, and really said, what do we need and what can we get rid of? So the board just approved the surplus of 5 vehicles, including the squad that came from Grover Beach initially. We weren't using it for response. Did a little bit of horse trading with the police chief in Arroyo Grande. I sold him the squad. And in return, I purchased 2 surplus unmarked vehicles that were previously assigned to their commanders, 40,000-mile vehicles in great shape. It was a win-win for us. The police chief got a vehicle that he's going to use for special events, and it allows us to get rid of older equipment that isn't as fuel efficient. And obviously, when we're done, we'll have a net reduction of 3 vehicles, and all the soft costs associated with that, with fuel and insurance and all that stuff, will go away. The proceeds from the sale of these vehicles will be used to establish a vehicle replacement fund, which doesn't exist today. You know, there's always the potential that we may have to use some of those proceeds for maintenance if we exceed our line item budget, but excited to report that we're really taking a look at everything that we have. The automatic aid agreement, I think I've spoken to enough. Just want to kind of give you a heads up on some headwinds, and I don't think any of these are new to you. Just to finish talking to you about the fleet. Reserve firefighter recruitment, as you know, these are part-time employees. In the past, we've been really fortunate in recruiting folks that come out of the Hancock Fire Academy, keeping them for 1 to 2 years because they have to complete a task book to get their state firefighter 1 certification before they start testing. With the boomer retirements, there's huge opportunity with the larger fire agencies right now. So these young folks that are coming out of the Fire Academy are directly applying for positions in these large agencies, which is directly impacting our recruitment and retention efforts as well. Battalion chief, we went out for recruitment shortly after it was budgeted. We were unsuccessful in getting the right fit for our department, so it just was reflown March 1st. Just to wrap up, We have great employees. They provide compassionate and professional care to our communities. They really care. Vehicles and equipment are aging and require replacement, as do I. And staffing levels remain constrained. So that's my report. I'd love to entertain any questions you have for me, and I appreciate the time.
Thank you. That was really great. We'll start at Matt's end.
Really well done, Chief. I got to say, when we did California Edition, you were fabulous. I appreciate the report tonight. I did have, I will alert you, I didn't come prepared to talk about it. Obviously, it's not tonight's agenda, but the Exhibit B on some of the proposed changes, the non-low-hanging fruit, did cause us some concerns when we addressed those.
Speak up, Matt.
They did cause us some concerns when we addressed those a couple of weeks ago and our ability as a small district to be able to maintain our funding obligations should some of those come to pass. So those were some challenges that we identified. Thank you, and I really also applaud and appreciate the attention to the automatic aid agreement, because I think that's been a real resource drain or strain, I should say, for some of the communities in the Five Cities Fire Authority. So.
Thank you.
Karen?
I don't have anything.
Okay. Jennifer?
Yes, thank you. I was just curious. I guess I am a little more curious about those negotiations, and I'm not sure... for the automatic mutual aid, it sounded like you were saying that it maybe wouldn't be automatic, but we're still going to be available. Is that what you were saying?
So the state of California is built on a foundation called mutual aid. There's a master agreement. Mm-hmm. So if anyone, any other agency is taxed at resource levels, they can always request assistance. If you recall, my main slide up here was the sub-fire in San Luis Obispo right around Christmas. That taxed the city of San Luis Obispo, so they did a mutual aid request, and actually Engine 2 spent 10 hours there, and I think flowed 150,000 gallons of water. So that's always a resource because we know that we're going to depend on each other, but it won't be an automatic dispatch like it is now.
Okay. Lori, did you have any questions? You got to turn your mic.
On the vehicles that you're needing, you need to replace one engine right now, but you do need two. Is that correct? So how far down do you think it's going to be before you can get funds for the second one?
Well, that's a great question. You know, obviously the way the JPA agreement is written, there's got to be unanimous support for a budget adoption. So the communities and my board, I don't think any of this is news to my board that we need a second fire engine. It's just one of those things where we need to work with mm-hmm. the communities and see where it falls within their priorities.
Okay, the cost about the same as the first one?
Yeah, the cost of this first engine was $580,000.
Yeah. Okay, that's all. Thank you.
I did have a couple questions for you. So you said about 10%, the mutual aid, the efforts are about 10% are going to mutual aid, correct?
Currently, we're running about last year we ran 399 calls.
Correct.
And additional calls to support the automatic aid agreement over our 3,300 Five Cities Fire Authority calls.
Okay, so if we were to turn that, how much does CAL FIRE offer in a percentage-wise to the Five Cities?
I don't have that specific number, but when we looked at it initially, CAL FIRE was quick to acknowledge that if you're thinking about scales and equity, it was really tipped to their favor. So definitely worked hard with us to try to right-size the agreement. And I'm sorry I don't have the specific numbers for you.
Okay, but you can get kind of back to us because, you know.
I can give you the numbers that we based the initial revision discussion on, certainly.
Right. And then what would you say, what percentage of your annual budget would go into educational efforts?
You're talking about our public education to the communities?
The parks, you know, when... like that happened at Ramona Park, and I know that you have trucks at the Easter egg hunt over on Elm, which, you know, and visiting the schools and such, which, you know, it's super valuable.
So I don't have the budget in front of me to tell you what that line item total is, but if I'm going to guess, it's about $5,000 a year, which isn't a lot. So we really are wise with our spending. For the event at Ramona Garden Park, we were really fortunate to have PG&E sponsor us with a $5,000 community donation, which was a huge help.
And that includes staff time, too, that $5,000?
No, that's just our line item for public education.
Yeah, so that's just for materials.
Plus staff time that's involved. So when those engines are at public events, those folks are on payroll.
That's right. So what would you say? Get back to me on how much
I can give you an hourly
that,
rate for an engine company.
Well, you know, just kind of a guesstimate on how much the department is having to spend towards education. I'm just trying to wrap my...
I can certainly get that back to you.
And then, and I apologize for asking this question, but it is broken to quarters, the share of cost for the department. Is it broken to quarters or... Like Oceano's share would be 25%.
Remember, there's four components to the funding formula.
Right.
And they're variable, so...
Okay, variable's the answer.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Chief.
And does the staff have any questions or anything? No? Okay.
Your 45 minutes is up.
Can you just wait right there to see if anybody from the audience? So I'll open it up for public comment now. If anybody has any questions for the Five Cities Flyer Authority, now's the time. Ms. Tucker.
Sorry, we just share the microphone.
Good evening, I'm Julie Tucker. Quick to Mary's question about your crew on public outreach situation. They're on the clock anyway, and if they had a call, wouldn't they need to fold up the tent and respond? So I don't know that that's a fair question in that you're asking what their hourly rate is, because they're going to go to work if they get a call. They're out of there. With regard to your hotspots, you mentioned the senior residences, and I would just like to kind of maybe shine a different light on how we think about those facilities and who lives there and who's making those calls or needing that service. And that while those homes or the Arroyo Grande Care Center are in the boundaries of Arroyo Grande as a city, the people that live there come from all around here. Their primary home was perhaps Oceano or Grover Beach or Oceano or Arroyo Grande, excuse me. And if you kind of looked at those demographics, you're still serving all three communities, even though they are in Arroyo Grande. You mentioned your strategic plan. I'd be curious if you could tell us who the consultant is. Then automatic aid. If you're not going to respond, what does that translate to dollars left here to serve your service area? And then I hope you actually watch the Oceano Community Services District meeting of 2 weeks ago when they discussed your term sheets, because I think Mr. Ogren and the board raised some pretty good questions, and then I hope you can answer those as those term sheets and the amendments to the JPA are vetted in the future. With the vehicle maintenance, you said you might have to dip into what the net proceeds were for the sale of the other vehicles. What were the net proceeds of the sales of those? And then I understand that you are entering into an MOU or negotiations with the union for your firefighters, and you know there's got to be an anticipated budget line item or hit to the budget for increased salaries, as it is certainly time that those individuals get a raise.
Thank you, and I hope I captured Ms. Tacker's questions in my scrawl here. First of all, the name of the company that will be facilitating the strategic plan is based in Orange County, and they're called Virtual CEO. Automatic aid by cost impacts of not responding. Our folks are on duty on a daily basis, 24/7. So if they're not going out on automatic gated calls, they will still be here training and being prepared to answer that second or third call within our jurisdiction. Public education. Ms. Tecker was pretty accurate. Our crews that are on duty to go to the Easter egg hunt, if something happened, they would leave the Easter egg hunt. But there are other events where the crews are dedicated. So we're bringing in, so an example is Strawberry Festival in Arroyo Grande. As part of that special event process, the organizing committee is required to pay for an overtime engine to be staged in Arroyo Grande because of the impacts of closing that main road. And that engine sits over on Mason Street in case it has to go east. So it really depends on the magnitude of the event as to whether we're going to charge the organizers and bring in an overtime crew. But typically for a standard school visit, it's the on-duty crew that may leave to respond to that call. Let's see, top 20, heard you loud and clear. Actually have several friends whose parents were living out of the area and couldn't care for themselves anymore, so their parents are now living close to where their kids are. Net proceeds from the sale. The net proceeds from the transaction with the Arroyo Grande Police is $12,000, but we won't know what our total net proceeds are until we finish taking our vehicles out of service, which really means removing the radio equipment and then giving them to an auction company that other communities use, and we'll get they'll keep 10% and send us the remaining 90% of what they sell for. MOU negotiations, our union has notified us with their legal attorney of their intent to open and revise or have a successor MOU. That's all the information I have at this time, but it's certainly something that will be coming forward to my board. And I believe I answered the questions.
Anything Thank you, else? Mr. Lieberman. I think that I still do like to know what percentage it in real cost it costs to be in an educational arena. Whether they're on call or not is immaterial. And of course, if there was a situation, they would roll up their tents and go. You know, that's only the obvious. But it helps me to assess in my mind exactly how, not exactly, but a guesstimate of how dollars are spent and how they move through the system. So that was my intent, not other intentions. And I do want to applaud you for bringing down the automatic response aid. I've seen it go from 30% in the past down to 10% of the mutual aid agreement. So I applaud you on that. And compared to other fire divisions in the state of California, 10% is really pretty good, you know, so I have to applaud you on that, and I think you have a really strong organization, and you guys should be really proud of your work.
So we are.
Thank you.
Madam President?
Yes, sir.
Just to add real quickly, Chief Liran has also scheduled an executive team meeting for next week, so I'll be getting together with the city managers to address some of the current status updates. And also want to reiterate, their value in public education is obviously far in excess of the $5,000 line item.
Oh, yes.
Sure. Absolutely.
All right.
Thank you.
Sorry, I just wanted to say, too, I forgot to say it before, but I'm really excited about that smartphone app, although I do look forward to hopefully it being available on Android. But but it is really neat, and I'm very thankful for that. Did you say it was a chief from Santa Barbara? Is that right?
It's a fire captain who's an Arroyo Grande resident.
Okay, yeah. So I'm very thankful to him for sharing.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Chief. Appreciate it.
Okay, so we'll go back to the order of the agenda. Tony. I only assume there's nobody here from the Sheriff's Department. How are you tonight?
Good. Good evening, Board. Tony Maricino. For the last couple of weeks, we've had 9 work orders, 16 USAs, 7 customer service calls, 0 call-outs, completed the state reports for last month, currently updating some SOPs, currently also doing the electronic annual reporting to the State Water Resource Control Board that will be reviewed by the general manager at the end of this week and submitted. Clean the lift station. We've been doing some sewer cleaning also. Currently working on the CCR that is due by July 1st. Try to get that buttoned up a little early so it can go out with bills. We had an employee attend a D2 class before he takes his test next Saturday. Also working on some computer-based training for the district. It is a safety program that will be online for all the employees. I'll get you more information on that as it comes. Weed abatement, first of the month equipment runs. We attended a class regarding hydrants and valves maintenance program. Also did first of the month laterals. As for laterals, you guys have some papers in front of you. We actually have 8 laterals, and only 7 of them are on there that we have to maintain monthly, which requires 2 staff, a vehicle, a camera, and a rotter. You got to go out there and camera the laterals monthly, ensure they're not going to back up or clog, or also rotter them before they clog up and have an SSO. We did have an SSO last month, and that was a sewer lateral. There's one more lateral that I got to put on here. It's actually on Grell Lane that they have to pay attention to because we did have an incident year and a half ago.
I think it was a year ago January.
It
wasn't mine, though.
Correct, it was not. And here's some also some mains that do have issues, and it's annotated just from us doing the SSMP sewer cleaning. Now, all these mains might not need to be replaced, maybe sections.
Tony, I'm sorry, but this is on the agenda, so let's not to go into too much detail right now on that, and we'll cover it during the agenda discussion.
Yes, sir. I just want to give you an update regarding our water production. We've received 93.39 acre feet of state water, 0 Lopez, and we've only pumped 0.12 acre feet, 4 samples only.
Well, what was the bottom, the groundwater pump again? I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
0.12 acre feet, and that's just for samples. We're required to sample our wells monthly. So we've not used our wells.
So we didn't pump at all.
We're not using our wells for consumption, just for samples.
So we just pulled 93 down from state. Is that correct?
Yes, year to date since the beginning of the year.
Okay.
Lopez is currently at 14,414 acre feet, which is 29.2% full. Any questions? Thank you.
I got a question.
Oh, wait. Not getting out that easy.
Do you still gag when cleaning out the lift station? Or?
Absolutely.
I'm calling your NCO.
You remember the time.
I do.
You gave us a hand, actually, a few years ago.
Very clear. I'd like to point out I didn't gag.
Tony that is gag. True. You did not.
Oh, so much.
I didn't volunteer to do it again, but I didn't gag.
That is true. You're more than welcome to come out again.
I'll take you up on it.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Thank
Tony.
Thank you, Tony. We appreciate it.
So just to follow up on the water production and use information that Tony provided on state water, in 2015, we were predominantly state water as well. And in 2016, we would be expected to do so. Our storage in Lopez Lake come April 1st is going to be approaching 1,000 acre feet or about more than 3 years of supply from
what
Lopez.
What was that number again?
1,000 acre feet. Our annual allocation is 303. There's going to have to be a couple of adjustments for evaporation losses, so I think the actual number will be a little bit less. But we're going to have more than 3 years of storage in Lopez, and when I say 3 years of Lopez allocation, our total consumption on an annual basis right now is just under 700 acre feet. So we'll have, you know, a year and a half of water solely in Lopez after 2016. So again, we're in a pretty good situation, able to live within our state water allocation on an annual basis, and we're increasing water and storage behind Lopez.
And I think that it's important to point out, too, is that the important work of Zone 3 by reclassifying that basin as a retention basin allowed Oceano and others, if they have any spare allocations, to retain our water in that basin. And that was a very, very big policy. And the Board of Supervisors did give their blessing. And so not only does it keep the pumps going at Lopez, but it allows us to retain any extra water. And so you're saying that we have 1,000 acre feet saved?
With our 2016 allocation, it will go up to about 1,000 acre feet, yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Do you want to talk about Zone 3?
So my staff, my quick report is Zone 3 Advisory Committee is next week, and so I'll report on that at your board's next meeting. Since our last meeting, I did submit a notice of interest for a local hazardous mitigation plan grant in order to get funding to prepare an LHMP. Five Cities Fire Authority several years ago helped to pull together a multi-jurisdictional plan that includes Arroyo Grande, Grover Beach, South Sanitation District, and Lucia Mart Unified School District. But unfortunately, in those prior years, the then administration of Oceano did not get Oceano included. So hopefully we'll be able to get some grant money so that we can do an Oceano-specific local hazard mitigation plan. And if we are successful, that will help then in future updates to be part of a multi-jurisdictional plan. It's a two-step process. First step is submittal of a notice of interest. And then the second step is whether or not we get, if we are asked to submit a formal application for a grant. And so far we've had Congresswoman Lois Capps and State Assemblyman Cacho Asajian provide letters of support on the notice of interest. The computer-based training that Tony spoke to, I'm optimistic about as well, and next week I'll be running through a dry run of it. But essentially it's a firm that provides a tracking of all the training that is being done by an agency, whether it's OSHA-related for field operations or whether it's discriminatory harassment training for everybody. The program is a good program. They have a lot of different modules for different training aspects, and it will really help to help us with not just developing a very good training program for each staff member, but also being able to track actual training that's been conducted and documenting training activities. A very cost-effective approach. It's within our current training budget. In fact, it's only less than 20% of the cost of our current training budget. So I look forward to running through that. And that concludes my update for this meeting.
Okay. Do we want to take any public comment for any other reports?
We still have our other reports.
Yeah, board
of directors reports, committee reports.
Okay. Lori, do we want to start at your end on directors' reports?
I don't have any.
Good night,
reports.
Gentlemen. Thank you. You don't have any? Okay. Jennifer?
Last week, I did attend a meeting with other staff and elected representatives from agencies regarding the Pismo Beach Recycled Water Project, which they are hoping to make a regional project. They gave us an overview of the project, which I can give you some details on, and then they also discussed how we might move forward as a group. With the project, it would be an injection project. When the water is purified, then they would be putting it back into the ground, and the recoverable yield is estimated at about 698 acre feet a year. With their preliminary cost estimates at about 1,900 to 2,800 acre feet, or $2,800 per acre foot. But that is just with one of the alternatives, and we will be looking at an additional alternative. But they're looking at injecting that in with inland wells and possibly also coastal wells to help with seawater intrusion. As well as being able to fill up our groundwater basin as well. There are two options for the advanced treatment facility. One of them is on-site at the Pismo Beach Wastewater Treatment Plant, and that's the one that where the cost is, they have that estimate of the cost for $1,900 to $2,800 an acre foot. But there's an additional alternative, which would be an off-site option, which would be cited to coordinate with South San Luis Obispo Sanitation District if they are interested in participating as well. And those costs are to be determined because it would depend on where it is and other factors.
So it's they're predicting 1,900 acre feet if it's on site? $1,900
to $2,800.
Dollars.
Dollars.
Yeah.
698 acre feet.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sorry.
That seems so high for being on site.
Well, it's the cost for the capital improvements, maybe.
And did they talk about any, like, in 10 years it going down or anything like that?
I believe that that is with the cost of the improvements over a period of time. I'm not sure, though.
The cost range estimate includes not just the reclaimed treatment facilities on-site, but it also includes all the piping
yes.
in order to take the reclaimed water and the piping necessary to get it to injection wells, as well as the cost of the injection wells. And those numbers obviously need to be refined. The regional option, one of the benefits there would be it would reduce the piping costs because it's going to be more centrally located. Mm-hmm. And then if it's done in conjunction with South County Sand District, then, of course, there would be economies of scale because there would be a higher production of, you know, a higher quantity of water going through the facilities. And we'd expect some economies of scales and those numbers to come down with a regional plant. But unknowns include things like land acquisition costs.
Okay, well, it's just in the beginning stages,
yes.
So as it continues to flush out, I think.
Yes, well, there will be more.
It'll get better.
Yeah, and we'll be discussing in future meetings sharing of the costs and how and the benefits to each community and how that will all work out. So.
And they're putting a fiscal committee together, right?
That will be talked about. That's what they were. I think they were talking about having staff get together.
Okay, well, so they do more than just talk about it.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
I definitely want to move forward.
Is there anything else you'd like to report on,
Jen? No, I believe that was the only meeting I attended.
Well, thank you for taking on that huge project. I think it's important and super important to everybody. So thank you, and I know it's a lot of work. I attended the Water Resource Advisory Committee. I had my minutes all together, and I lent my packet to somebody, and they failed to give it back to me. So we'll have to go off my memory. The Water Resource Advisory Committee sent their annual report to the Board of Supervisors, summarizing some of the work that had been done throughout the year through the committee. There was also elections. Linda Chipping was elected once again as our co-chair. She really is an extremely knowledgeable woman and runs a really great meeting. One of the more likable things about that committee is the flow of information is freely. It's not as constricted, and everybody just kind of sits together and people's thoughts can be a little bit more honest versus up at the table under such rigid rules. Okay, and then I attended. Oh, I did. What's the name of that show? Pavel Ogren.
California Edition,
to talk about some of the things happening in Oceano and some of the things that are happening with the drought in the South County. So it was actually a really good week and attended a lot of meetings, and I like to watch a lot of meetings on the computer too. So on that note, does anybody else have anything they'd like to report before I open it up for public comment?
Karen, and then I still have the sanitation district.
Oh, yep, Matt, sorry.
Okay.
Didn't mean to cut you off at the knees.
Oh, that's okay. I'll defer to VP White.
Well, I attended the Oceano Advisory Meeting, and we were proceeding moving forward on the downtown revitalization. It's still in the discussion ages, but I think it's moving forward. And one thing I noticed, the Oceano overhead, that where they're really starting to make gains on where they're putting that new pedestrian walkway through there, and it's
the overpass bridge?
Yeah, the overpass bridge.
Okay.
It's really impressive because that really is going to, I can see more bicycles coming, but it shows us where somewhere in Oceano, it's only one side of that road has got pedestrians and bicycles, and it's the side that doesn't have sidewalks down by the fruit stand, and there's really shows a real need somewhere. There's going to have to be a crosswalk. There's going to have to be a way from people to get from the north side of Front Street Highway 1 to the south side, and I mean that's something that somewhere along the line is going to have to be part of the downtown revitalization, or somehow when 13th Street happens. Anyway, that's my brief report.
And then I heard that maybe the advisory council is helping to pay for a new sign for Oceano.
Oh, yeah. Yes, we will have a new Welcome to Oceano sign that will be going up on the very tippy corner of Halcyon's property, across from Hayashi's fruit stand as we come in from the east to the west side of the town. And it's beautiful. It's a beautiful sign, and the last one was kind of vandalized, and this one's going to be put on pipe that's got concrete in the center of it, and it's not going to be something somebody can just drag away.
Karen, can I ask you to announce when the OAC meetings are? And
the next OAC meeting will be, and I don't have it, March, it's the fourth Monday of every month at 4 p.m. in this building.
Okay.
I'd be very happy to have any kind of public participation.
March 28th.
March 28th will be our next meeting.
Okay. Oceano Advisor Committee, March 28th at 4 p.m.
here
at the Oceano District. Thank you. Did you attend any other meetings?
No. I did not get to Zone 3 Tech this month. The first time I missed it in months and months.
Years and years.
Years and years. But I do have a very interesting project I'm working on, and that's coastal erosion and sediment. And we're going to be able to hopefully look at the proposed reports on that next week, and then the meeting is next Friday.
Okay, great. So we look forward to your report back on that
yeah.
one. Okay. So for people who would like to get involved in local things, the Oceana Advisory Committee is really a great place to be. So, and then Mr. Guerrero.
Thank you. I attended the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District last Wednesday. A couple of items of note. One was the mid-year budget review. The plan's tracking pretty well. There were a couple, the only startling overage, startling may not be the right word, but the only a notable overage, let me put it that way, notable overage is the amount being spent on attorney's fees. The amount being spent on attorney's fees is quite high. Or is above budget, I should say. The other thing is we had the review of the bylaws that's coming back next week, but the rescoped recycled water facility planning study was back on the agenda. As you recall, there was some discussion about a satellite plant that was found not to be economically feasible. So the discussion and move forward was the alternatives to upgrade the existing wastewater treatment plant to provide water for agriculture, irrigation, or groundwater recharge, and construction of an off-site advanced treatment facility to provide water for groundwater recharge. I think this ties into the discussion that Jennifer was leading us on, because I think it's important that we have a regional approach. This really is a small community. Pismo is not geographically isolated from us. And so if we can utilize our resources together, it seems to make sense. And this board at some point may want to consider using whatever leverage we can use to make sure that it is a regional approach. I think that's the most economically feasible way to handle it. We did meet in closed session regarding the SDRMA claim, trying to recover attorney's fees, and the spill litigation. There was a memo that was released to the public following the spill litigation regarding the status of that litigation, the writ that's been taken up that's being heard in the Sacramento courts. What has happened is the state fought both of, we filed an initial writ or complaint, as you want to call it. The initial writ was demurred to. We survived 4 of 5 causes of action in that initial demur. One of the important things about that was that the initial cause of action included the State Water Board as a party. So if you recall, the State Water Board prosecutes and hears the administrative appeal. And so this obviously is a challenge to the process, the violations, what we've perceived as violations of due process in the handling of the administrative hearing. When the one cause of action that was that the demur was sustained on, we were given leave to amend. The board attorneys, Danny Brand, did amend the writ. We thought that was going to satisfy the pleading requirements. It was demurred to again by the state. And well, the report back that we received was that the demur was overruled again. So it puts the state in a position where they have to answer, including the State Water Board. Additionally, the state had been ordered to provide the administrative record. They were late in providing it by about 3 weeks, and so there is some challenges that may be that's not a good way of putting it. I don't want to call it challenges, but they were late in getting it filed. So there will be hopefully limited discovery, but there will be some discovery proceedings that go on, and then it'll move forward for a decision from the judge. Hopefully soon. The sooner the better. But soon in legal terms, in sometime this year. So hopefully we will be able to move past this and get a favorable answer for the ratepayers. So that is my report on the sanitation district.
Does anybody have any questions? Okay. Matt, can I ask you a couple questions? Can you elaborate on the bylaw change?
Not much. Let me see, I have it here.
There seemed to be a lot of discussion. The meeting went on for a long length of time. And so I thought, since it was taken so much time, that it had to have had some importance or priority.
Well, it was the yearly bylaw. The bylaws call for a yearly review in February, and we did them in March. And the proposed change was to 1.3 initially, and then there was some discussion about 2.9 and some public comment suggesting other changes. It was not adopted yet. What we asked was that staff bring back a strike-through copy so we can see what the changes, that the proposed changes are. The 1.3 would read, in the absence of the chair, the vice chair of the board of directors shall serve as chairperson over all meetings of the board. If the chair and the vice chair of the board will both be absent, the chair may name any member of the board to perform the duties of the presiding officer prior to the meeting. If the chair's absence is unexpected, the chairperson shall be specified by standing order of the chair. And so that, and then there was some disagreement with the language. I think it's 2.6 or 2.9, 2.9, because that would, if you read it, if you make that change, it would have been inconsistent with 2.9, which deals under the rules of decorum section limitation, the rules of decorum. So anyway, this is being brought back. Again, the request was to have a strike-through copy so that we can compare it and make a more reasoned decision rather than an off-the-cuff decision. So it did take a while. There was quite a bit of public comment on bylaws, surprisingly. But
and that was the only thing that needed tightened up in the bylaws?
I don't know if I understand that as a question. I mean, there was some public comment about requesting people's names, that rules of decorum, lining up behind the podium. There were some public comments about things like that. But that's what we addressed on last Wednesday.
So it must be a priority then, because as I go through the bylaws, I see other things that are probably more pressing and
okay,
can put us, you know, in a bad spot. And so so I was just trying to figure out how the priority went about. And I guess it's at staff selection to determine what bylaws they want to...
No, the board obviously has... the board is the one that adopts the bylaws, that makes the changes to the bylaw, with recommendations, of course, from staff, be it the staff of the attorney. But, you know, if you want to send me some comments later, I'd be happy to bring those forward. I did forget to add, there was a special meeting that was held prior to interview candidates for the general, district administrator position. So, and that is ongoing, and hopefully we'll have something to announce soon.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Okay, we'll open it up for public comment. Is there anybody who'd like to? Ms. Tacker.
Good evening again. I'm Julie Tacker, and I too attended the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District board meeting. And I believe there were just two interviews, and I also believe there were 9 applications. And it seems like when the pool is that small, that you could do more interviews. Just an idea.
Do you have a question in there?
No, that's actually a suggestion. And I don't have to just ask questions when I make public comment. That's how it works. So, Mr. Guerrero, your report on the litigation with the State Water Board, the decision you're waiting for, isn't that merely, this is a question, merely to rehear the item? So then you'd start all over with a hearing and more legal bills incurred. What I see with the public participation is that the people who do attend are actually suggesting that you just pay the fine and be done with this thing, because you have spent more on legal defending the sanitation district and Mr. Wallace than the actual fine. The rescoping of the recycled water and recycled water study, I'm hearing kind of two different things. What Ms. Blackburn reported is that there's this idea of a regional approach. What we heard at Sanitation District was that PISMA was too far out there. They weren't looking back to include the Sanitation District. And I hope you do, because you do have it. Use your leverage to hold PISMA up to whatever it takes to become a regional approach. They need places to inject their water. They will, if they were to just go it alone, the concentration of brine that would be sent via their pipeline to the sanitation district would have to be diluted by your flows, and that may inhibit
the sanitation district's ability to recycle as much water as they wanted to. So I'm hopeful that, and I think we're on the same page, that PISMO take a step back and see that you are all included. And I've said this, you're the Northern Cities Management Area. Work as a team on this important resource, and I hope you do.
Thank you for your comments, Ms. Tacker. Okay.
Madam President?
Yes, sir.
If I might provide a little bit of clarification on both the efforts of PISMO and South Sound County Sand District on recycled water. There is now, I believe, a fairly good amount of consistency. Similar approaches by both agencies in terms of looking at on-site reclamation versus off-site reclamation. And so the new scope of work that was approved by the Sand District at its last meeting did that as well, to look at on-site reclamation and off-site reclamation. The idea at the Sand District is that previous evaluations of on-site reclamation have already been moved very far. Kennedy Jenks previously did analysis. So the WSC work for the Sand District is going to predominantly focus on off-site. That's consistent with what we are also seeing at PISMO Beach. And the idea being is that both agencies looking at off-site reclamation is where they're really coming together. With respect to PISMO being ahead of the Sand District in its actual work efforts, because PISMO has already went through the feasibility phase, the Sand District right now is going through the feasibility phase. PISMO is developing the environmental impact report and looking at a range of alternatives as required under CEQA, the California Environmental Quality Act. That effort itself is going to be very productive because at such point in time that the Sand District finishes the feasibility efforts that they're doing, and to the extent that it may very well point to a regional reclamation effort, well, PISMO will already be substantially done with the environmental impact report. And so I think it's important that PISMO continues to move forward with their work effort because it will help to ensure that a regional reclamation facility can be done in a timely manner. The timely manner is important because we know that grant money is part of the Proposition 1, which voters approved in California. And so I'm a little bit concerned. I hope that the feasibility effort on the Sand District hits good pace now that the board has approved the revised scope. But at the same time, I like the progress that PISMO is making because they're moving into, you know, those advanced phases of developing the EIR and really getting to the point then that would subsequently follow would be the design efforts. And again, the approach from both agencies is consistent. The fact that PISMO is ahead of the work effort is actually beneficial for timely development of the project, and hopefully it will all come together latter part of this year.
Can I make a clarification also?
Oh. After the board gets done talking, then... Okay. So, yeah, I'm sorry. We did, yes, most definitely.
We're still on the same topic.
Yes.
Right. Go ahead, Linda. Go ahead. And then we'll come back and do the rest of the comments.
I'm Linda Austin, Oceana resident, and I'm commenting on the bylaw change that you danced around on your report. And I listened to the meeting on the computer. And the whole purpose of the change in the bylaw, all that time was spent on, was directed directly to stop Mary Lucy from ever chairing a meeting at the Sanitation District when she sat on the board. All the public comment and the whole thing, that was the whole reason for the whole change. So I just wanted to make that clear and, you know, tell it like it was. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Austin. I do appreciate that. Is there anybody else in the public who would like to speak? Okay, we're going to bring this discussion back to the board. Mr. Ogren, are you done with your comments? Jennifer had comments and Matt had comments, or
Miss Blackburn's shaking her head no.
I did not.
No.
Okay.
Was it you, Karen, who?
No.
Well, I know Matt did. Okay, Matt, go ahead.
Okay. One thing, there was a comment about this is being done to defend Mr. Wallace. That is not true. Mr. Wallace has not been with us for 3 years. There's I don't think anybody on the board is doing anything at this point to defend Mr. Wallace.
Are you talking about the lot, the state
about
lawsuit?
Yes. And the question was if it's just a rehearing. And there's a lot of possibilities. One of them, of many, is that it would be a rehearing. So I'd like to correct that statement that that's only one of many possibilities. And I do understand Ms. Austin's concern. It is not the intent of me sitting on the board as vice chair to exclude Ms. Lucy or anybody from OCSD from attending or chairing that meeting. And that's one thing that needs to be brought out to be clear next week, is that the intention should not be to exclude anybody. If you're sitting in my stead and you chair a meeting, I think that's fantastic, Mary. So,
I'm sorry, I'm not that ego-driven, really, to have to worry about chairing a meeting. But I did believe that bylaw was put in there to attempt to make sure that I never did chair a meeting, which I've never had to chair a meeting to get my point across. But the bylaw change was, and I was mentioned by name numerous times, and Ms. Tacker got up there and commented as well. So, yes, I did take it personal. But what I took more personal is that so much time was taken on this topic, and versus doing the work, getting the work done, and the board, the sanitation board, sucked right into it, got sucked off track, and got trapped in this bylaw change that had absolutely nothing with moving the agenda forward. And that's the part that I was really very, very uncomfortable with. I did watch the meeting, and also to point out that is the second attack of trying to exclude me from participating in the sanitation district. And I do understand that the interim plant manager did call and apologize to the men for his appearance here last week, but he failed to call any of the women that he insulted as well. So on that note, I'm going to take it back to the Sand District and ask for better clarification as to their participation, whether it be in concert with Pismo Beach or what their intent is, because I am getting several. Mr. Scholes said that he didn't like the order that people were invited to participate in Pismo Beach. And that, to me, I didn't understand that. He didn't like the order, you know, to be invited. The mayor of Arroyo Grande, and rightfully so, he's made the comments, I'm not in the water business, but unfortunately we're all in the sewer business, and the sewer business does create water, so we have to do something with that in order to be good stewards of the sanitation plant. So I would like to, and then also too, the board was led to believe that the sanitation district is very close to the planning stages that Pismo's at, and they're absolutely nowhere near each other. They're at the opposite ends of the spectrum as far as I'm concerned. Not to say that they couldn't catch up if they focused on the work instead of changing bylaws to block people's participation, but they were led by some to think that they were keeping pace with Pismo, which speaks against a regional approach. So that's the end of my comments on that. Any other comments? None? Okay. If it's all right with the board, can we take a 5-minute break?
Sure.
Would that be all right with everybody? Or Matt, you want to do 4-minute break?
Well, I was just thinking, why don't we come back at 10 till, because it's 7:46 or 7:40. Yeah, 7:40.
7:44.
Yeah. So why don't we come back at 10 till?
Okay. Okay, well, we're going to adjourn till 10 to 8. Okay, we're going to bring this meeting back to order. Thank you for being so patient. Let's look at the consent agenda items. Is there any public comment for any items that are on the consent agenda, Ms. Tacker?
Julie Tacker, and the only question, this time I do have a question, relates to the RFP for district engineering services. It really was not that long ago that you did this. While your staff report says that it was early 2013 that you did the RFPs, it was many months later. I think it might have been one of the first things Mr. Minnery did was the contract with DPSI, and I think that was around August of 13. And so I'm just curious what's happened with that, or will DPSI also be participating in the proposals? Are you asking them for proposals as well? Or has the relationship soured? I just don't know. It seems awfully soon to look for a new engineer.
Well, let me ask, does anybody on this board know what year we changed from the Wallace Group? Was it 2009?
I'm not sure about the Wallace Group, but it was 3 years ago that DPSI.
And then we went
DPSI,
and then,
yeah.
Right. Then we went to
DPSI.
DPSI. Right. I remember that. So yeah, we had an on-call engineer for quite a few years there, after the regular engineer firm. Is there anything you'd like to comment on this, Mr. Ogwin?
No, the agreement with the DPSI is non-exclusive, so this is not a termination of their work effort. As I explained in the staff report, we're about to start embarking on, you know, some significant long-term capital improvement areas, and I want to go out and do an RFP and see what kind of services are proposed.
Well, thanks for taking the initiative. I appreciate it. Okay. I'll entertain a motion for consent agenda items if anybody has nothing else to ask.
I just have
okay, Karen.
The wills are the 1564, the pike.
The will serve on 1564, the pike.
Yes.
That's in Oceano, not in Arroyo Grande, because we have some crossover there. And I just wondered if that was.
It's a property we currently serve. I'm not sure, Celia, if it's an Arroyo Grande property we currently serve or an Oceano property we currently serve. Okay. And the idea is they're doing some modifications,
yeah,
but not additional living units. So they need to upgrade the meter. They need to pay the fee, but it's pretty straightforward.
Yeah, I wasn't concerned. I'm just
make
some revenue from a Red Grandy.
We
Thank
have
you.
Quite a few accounts over in that area.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Yeah. Did that get counted under Arroyo Grande's water or our water?
No, it's our water.
So we provide water and sewer?
And in many of those properties, that. Not sewer. That they're still connected to Arroyo Grande for sewer purposes, but it's our water. That
oh, okay. All right, very good. Thank you for that. So,
I'll move to approve consent agenda.
Okay, can Jennifer have a second?
Second. I second. Move.
Okay. Thanks. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Passes 5-0. Celia. All right. Mr. Ogren, you're on.
Thank you. Item 8 is really a discussion item about laterals and sewer laterals. In about May of 2014, your board had a discussion on it with no action. And it's time to follow up on that discussion. And I just handed out, and I put a sheet up there for the public as well. To me, the lateral issue is one of several unfunded programs that we need to be addressing in 2016. And I'm not going to, during my brief comments here, reiterate what's really in the staff report, because the idea is many, many agencies require property owners to maintain the lateral from their property line through the public improvements into the street and up to the collection system, but not all do, and we're one of the agencies that takes on the responsibility at the property line. And we have, as Tony mentioned before, several different laterals that are in pretty bad shape. In the staff report, there's discussions about Oceano and, as a disadvantaged community, the hardships that individual property owners can face if they have to repair their own laterals. And so the cost analysis, which is about $7 to $11 a month, assumes that we would do replacement of the laterals through a 50 to 75 year period. It's a very broad brushed type of cost analysis. Separately, at $5 a month, we could implement an extremely good program over the next 5 years. But the sheet that I handed out, which I think is part of the bigger picture relevancy, are what are the various unfunded programs that we have. And so today we were talking about lateral replacement programs, and what I want to do at the first meeting of every month this year is to bring forward some of those other items, like state water drought buffer, equipment replacement program. We heard Chief Lieberman today talk that they need to develop an equipment replacement program for Five Cities Fire Authority. We've previously talked about the interfund debt repayment, and that analysis I want to bring back to your board in the next few months as well. I listed three-year operating projections, because if in developing the budget this year, we want to make sure to look out 3 years and how well do our current rates and charges cover us for the next 3 years. The big ticket items, of course, are the water system capital improvement program and all the deferred replacement, as well as the water system capital improvement program and deferred maintenance. I also listed something called bond coverage requirements, because we have contracts that require a certain amount of revenues. If we take care of some of these unfunded programs, it's more likely that our bond coverage requirements will automatically be met, but that's a separate analysis. And then there's other issues out there like reclaimed water or Diablo Canyon water. So my point here is that I put the staff report together so that your board can discuss some of the policy implications and provide feedback. But the idea is not to expect a definitive direction from today, because this is one of several different programs that we need to be looking at. And the question that it really comes down to is, once we've evaluated all of them, then where's the give and take? What is the cumulative potential impact on costs to the community? And then after reviewing the various unfunded programs, where's the board's priority going to come in terms of which ones and to what degree do those different programs need to be funded? So it would be ill-advised just to take it as a singular item and say, yes, let's march down the road on this one particular program without evaluating the other unfunded programs over the next several months. So with this sheet, then, the idea is, next month, I want to come back and talk about state water drought buffer, and then the following month, the equipment replacement program, and then we start talking about the budgets in June. We'll address interfund debt repayment and three-year operating projections, and then the CIP programs, which are going to require a lot more work, will be later in the year. But again, this is one of many programs that we need to be addressing, and certainly looking forward to your board feedback on the contents of the staff report. And that concludes my comments.
Thank you, Mr. Ogren. Does anybody have any questions?
I do. Thank you, Ms. Lucy. Thank you. Just looking at this, especially as an issue like this, it's sort of crystal ball policy making, where we have no history of a maintenance program for this, and very little institutional knowledge other than when a line breaks. And I think Tony has been Mr. Maricino has been the one who brought this to our attention, that this is going to be an ongoing issue. And we have the sheet that was given to us with the hot spots in the areas. You know, I hadn't thought through, and you gave us this next sheet, this evaluation and progress sheet, but we can see that this could have some drastic effects on our ratepayers as we try to adopt these programs and protect the ratepayers, obviously, with the fiduciary duty in mind. My thinking was, when we look at the lateral program, obviously one option is to give the laterals back to the property owners, but I thought you handled it well and addressed it well in the community impact portion of the report, where, you know, $5,000 to $10,000 for any given Oceano household could be just staggering, and it may end up with a real health and safety issues and items not getting sewer laterals not getting fixed, and leakage and other things that can go on. And so I think when we do the final evaluation, to me, in order to ensure, like you put in the staff report, regulatory compliance, and that we have a safe community, I think that what we're going to need to do is maintain our ownership, but create, basically, we become like the insurer, where we have a maintenance program and we develop some reserves. And I think part of the analysis is going to be, how much reserves are we going to need? What are we anticipated? And I appreciated the very last page of the staff reports, the long-term wastewater lateral maintenance replacement program cost scenarios, on what we might be looking at in the future. And the numbers are staggering, $13+ million. And over the next 25 years, if we look at the 50 to 75 year lifespan. So for me, I think we ought to, as a board, lean towards a monthly surcharge towards the bill, as much as that hurts, in order to develop a fund to replace these as needed. And I think that will spread the risk out among the community, so that individual households don't get, you know, find themselves in an uninhabitable situation.
Yeah, in some respects, it would be like a community self-insurance program.
Right. And so that'll be where I think we should go. But obviously, I hadn't thought through some of these other issues in relation to this same topic that are shown on this sheet that you just gave us of the summary of unfunded programs. So I would definitely approve of bringing back this back once a month, as we develop through and work through our budgets and strategies and long-term pro forma type plans. I think that's what we have to do.
And Matt, did you want to do that once a month before the annual budget, or go quarterly after the annual?
Well, we're not going to finish all of them, that's for sure. And some of this may require, I would think, maybe a 218 process.
Yeah, in the monthly, since June is the budget month, I can come back in April and address state water drought buffer, May equipment replacement program, and then June, either as part of the budget or the meeting before, address the interfund debt repayment and three-year operating projections. So those first four items, five including the lateral replacement program, are very much doable leading up to the budget process. After that, I think it would be waiting a little bit longer so that we can get CIP numbers and some of the longer-term analysis that's necessary.
Great. So I just want to clarify that the amounts that you put, the 7 and 11, those are per month and not per billing cycle. So it would be 15 and 22 per billing cycle?
Yeah.
Okay.
It is per month, what I've shown.
Okay. Do you have an idea of how it would work in terms of giving the responsibility of the laterals back to the property owners when there is... I know there's at least one example of multiple houses being on one lateral. I don't know. Do you know if there's more than one of those situations, or how we would deal with that? Just curious.
And Tony might have a little bit more insight into the numbers. We have multiple units on a lateral, but according to our ordinance, those should all be on the same property, as opposed to separate properties that share the same lateral. So I think most of those cases is where we'll see multiple units on a particular piece of property. Sometimes they're commercial units, Sometimes there might be, well, duplexes and triplexes and those kinds of things. But if the responsibility is transferred over to property owners, it almost doesn't matter. It's theirs to figure out how to fix. And it's sort of like fences that are on property lines. If the fence falls down, the property owners can either figure out how to do it. They can collaborate or they can create a conflict. And both happen. If the laterals are their responsibility, we will see people who collaborate on fixing them, and we'll see people who develop conflicts in fixing them. It's almost human nature. The challenge in transferring them, in my mind, is that today we already know that there's a number of existing deficiencies. And certainly your board could adopt ordinances, and you have the power to say that is what it is and make the transfer. The challenge in doing so, of course, is that many would expect the existing deficiencies to be cured in advance, which itself would require funding. And if we're going to develop funding, then why not do sort of the self-insurance program that Director Guerrero spoke to? Either which way, it's going to cost money. And the range of estimates of $7 to $11, again, is very broad brush. So, for example, we know that as collection lines need to be replaced, and Tony mentioned a few where the collection lines absolutely need to be replaced and repaired, and those are going to be part of our CIP schedule. Well, it would be a natural, as part of that collection line repair, to go in and fix all the laterals at that time, too. So this cost scenario of $7 to $11 a month assumes we fix all laterals over time as standalone laterals, even though we know some of them will be fixed separately as part of a capital improvement program. And as I mentioned in my opening remarks, even a program that was $5 a month would go a significant way to cure a lot of the existing deficiencies, as well as the other problem that we have is that the cleanouts that are supposed to be at property lines throughout the community, there's probably only about half the properties that actually have cleanouts. We would be able to develop a very good five-year program at about $5 per month. So, again, when we're talking about this in broad brush, I want to use broad brush analysis. Mm-hmm. But when we look at the various things that need to be funded, there will be opportunity to go with some lower numbers to say, let's do a five-year program up front and then see how we go after that. But again, this is more of the bigger economic analysis of what if we were to develop a program to replace all laterals when we know that that won't really be necessary in the short term.
Personally, I feel uncomfortable handing over the laterals when the maintenance has not been done, but that is my opinion.
I support Matt's view, and I think we should keep control over them because I see another side of that. I know we have inspections and we have the power to control how they're repaired, but you're going to still have laterals that are this way and laterals that are this way, and if we have control over them, we have consistency. Okay. And so that when our crew runs into something, they know what it is.
Yeah, I think that it's actually one of the reasons why we pay water and sewer bills, you know, in hopes that those pipes will be maintained by the district. So also, too, is that I'm afraid that we'll have more fog offenders, fats, oils, and greases going down sewer systems because people will... Well, it's I pay for it, you know, I'll put whatever I want down there kind of attitude, and that's dangerous. So, you know, I think it's just an added bonus to this is one of the services you get when you hook up your water and sewer in Oceano. I know that we're kind of rare in that way. When I first moved here, I think it was just Cambria and Oceano who maintain these systems, and I thought that was a bonus. So I applauded the district on maintaining them. So that's my feeling about it. Anybody else have any feelings? No? Okay. Would anybody like public comment on this topic? Ms. Tucker.
Good evening again. I'm Julie Tucker, and your ratepayers are paying $19 plus every 2 months now. They're going to want to know what that money's been going for, and certainly would want to know the condition of the lateral before ever accepting responsibility for it. And if it was my lateral, I would expect you replace it before I ever took over responsibility for it. This hotspot list and the eight laterals that need monthly maintenance, it seems to me that those would just cry for replacement right away, and I think your sewer fund is the only one that has any money in it, so that's where it seems like you'd stop sending the guys out there, putting the time out there, and just get them replaced as soon as possible. And then just to kind of put a bow on it, the sanitation district just raised your rates, and over the next 5 or so years, their rate is going to double. So the picture gets cloudier, and you know, $5 a month on this one, when Pablo's given you a list of 8 or 9 other possibilities, if you added $5 a month or $10 a month to each of those on top of the sanitation district's increased charges, and then we know that your water system is crying for improvements too. It's very unfortunate Oceano is in the position they're in with the deferred maintenance on infrastructure, and getting a 218 to pass may be difficult when all of that comes to light. So I wish you well, and I'll help any way I can.
Anybody else have any public comment?
I'm Nancy Skidmore. I own some property in this area, and I'm new at this. This is my first meeting. So my question is, how much of the lateral are you talking about that you guys handle? Everything from the street to the property line? So that part of it there?
Yeah. Mike. That's correct. It's only to the property line.
Only to the property line?
Yes.
Okay. And other communities have the property owners own it all the way to the whatever the next piece is. What's the next piece?
All the way to where the main collection line is in
right.
the street.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay.
I just want to make one concluding comment because certainly Oceano has had some deferred maintenance. Part of that is because of Oceano has a very reliable water supply. So there have been past decisions by Oceano leaders to acquire water supplies at a cost. And when rates go up for one purpose, it makes it difficult to raise rates for other purposes. So we sort of have that double-edged sword right now. We're in the middle of a very significant drought, and Oceano's water supply is as reliable as anybody in this county and anybody in this state, Western United States. And maybe we should include Australia.
Keep going.
Yeah. You know, the point is that obviously prior leaders recognized the importance of a reliable water supply, and the pressure that it had on rates resulted in decisions that deferred maintenance. We need to start addressing the deferred maintenance issue. Tonight's not the night to make any final decisions because we do need to look at what are the various issues, what are the cumulative cost impacts, and that's really what we're embarking on right now.
You know, thank you for pointing that out. Having, you know, when you say that we have approximately 1,000 acre feet of water in storage, that's water that that we've collected and saved. And so I look at that as kind of being green water. You know, that is above and beyond what we will need in our town. And so because we've diversified our portfolios, our water so much, and so it comes at a cost, like you said, deferred maintenance. But here we are in an extremely severe drought, and we are probably one of the only communities that have the ability to help a neighbor that could possibly be in danger of not having enough water, that we'll be able to step up to the plate and offer some true assistance. So it has more than just a dollar value in it for me. It has a safety net for all in the South County and hopefully regionally. So that's my comment on that. Boy, when I got on this board, I asked a question. I said, how much, not taking into consideration the equipment it costs to pump groundwater, but I just kept thinking, the water, we don't have to pay for that water. We don't have to pay for that water. When I came on the board, it cost $340 an acre foot to pump the groundwater. Now, we don't dare touch it. So,
yeah, I just had
Karen, go ahead.
I think this is a really good tool that we can move forward on and really getting a better handle on everything, put it all together, and
yeah,
then we can make some stronger decisions as we go into the next 5 years.
This is really good. Go ahead.
Yeah, I would also love to hear any residents' opinions as you think about this and the options that we have. You know, if you have any input, please share.
Well, people with new laterals are going to say, give it back. Old laterals. I'm kidding. But I crunched some quick numbers. $750 a month, about $15,000 in revenue for that would contribute. So that would come back to the district for 2050, for 2050 connections. So $10,000 a month would be about $20,000. Or $10 a month, excuse me, would be about $20,000 a month. So.
Okay, something to think about.
Yeah.
Gordon? I agree with you. I think this is the smartest thing that we can do because the pipes in this town are so old, and it's, like Tony says, they're out there every week fixing something. And the only way we're going to get ahead of the game, or spending so much money just patching stuff, is to replace these things. It's got to be done to keep the community in the whole situation. It's happened to a lot of us, and it's scary because you think, my God, what happens if we have to replace the whole line now? But yeah, I think it's more appropriate than, you know, I can understand this easy. I mean, there's anybody that's living in older properties around here understand it too. I know it's going to cost a little money, but it's better a little now and not a lot later. So I think it's a wonderful idea.
And this, again, though, this is a change, a management change, a paradigm shift, really, from management by crisis to being forward-thinking, which I applaud.
You know, it makes me think also that whoever might be listening in the audience, there's a point that I should emphasize, is that in all of these issues, we'll be also pursuing grant revenues. That of the various items on this list, some are going to be more likely to be grant eligible. Others are going to be much less likely to be grant eligible. Laterals themselves are some of those that are much less likely to be grant eligible. But in speaking to the overall deferred maintenance, Tony and I were looking at our system today. We have water lines that were constructed in 1952, made out of steel, that are 2 inches in diameter, that are still part of our infrastructure. And we know that with the CHC proposal, some of that's going to get replaced, but we have a lot more of that. And those types of water system improvements are the ones that are more likely to be eligible for grant revenue. We've already obtained some grants in order to do some of the preliminary engineering. There's additional disadvantaged community funding that's going to be available, and Director Blackburn and I are going to go to a meeting tomorrow on that. And that would be the next phases of grant to help move it into sort of a final design type of a phase. So just to emphasize to everybody that part of this approach is going to be also to try to maximize grant revenues that we can receive.
Great. All right. On that note, Flint, Michigan got their water bill waived today.
All right.
Okay, moving right along.
Did Trump have anything to do with it?
I'm sure. Okay, number 8, business items.
That's where we are.
We're done.
Closed session.
Not quite yet. So I did hand out under 11. 9 and 10, we didn't have any items. If I might move forward to 11. And I handed out members available. So Senate Bill 885 has been approached.
Yes.
And California Special Districts Association sent out correspondence to get today to strongly oppose that particular legislation, because in the event that a design engineer who has provided a faulty design, this legislation would require us to defend up front the work effort of the design engineer. So the Special Districts Association has come out in strong opposition as it's been introduced, and is urging all special districts to provide letters of opposition. So I wanted to make sure to bring that forward. I received that in an email today.
What do you want to say?
When's this due by?
There's not a specific due date, and I can put this on a future agenda.
I was going to wonder if we knew when it was coming to back to committee or if it was going to be heard. That's why I didn't know.
Bills that are being discussed in March, especially anything that's controversy, it will take its time through committee. They did not provide a specific timetable, though.
Okay. So it's not imminent, then. But I think we should consider this. I'm just not ready to tonight.
Act as a group.
Pardon?
Act as a group.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I can
act as a group,
put it on the agenda for next meeting. As correspondence, I wanted to get to you very quickly because of the significance of the proposed legislation.
All right. So we're going to put this back on the agenda because we do want to write something.
Yeah, for next meeting.
Okay, yes. Great. Thank you. And do we want to hear public comment on any closed session items? Mr. Minnery, would you like to introduce that?
Is there any public comment, President Lucy, for this item? Before I...
No.
Okay.
You wanted to
no public...
what we were going to talk about.
All right. The board then will adjourn to closed session pursuant to Government Code 54956.9A. This is conference with legal counsel regarding the Santa Maria Valley Water Conservation District versus City of Santa Maria et al.
Okay. And we'll take public comment on closed session items. Any public comment? Hearing none. Close. My God. Okay, back in line. Mr. Minnery.
Yes. Reporting.
How was that presidential debate the other night?
It was amazing.
Really?
I don't know.
They seem to have two a week.
I'm not going
to
comment on the debate. But reporting out of closed session, there is no reportable action.
No reportable action. Thank you, sir. Is there anybody else that would like to do public comment before we close this colorful meeting?
We have item number 13, future agenda items, and there are two topics that I want to bring to your board's attention
as
we're wrapping up.
Okay.
One is a dump station. So
go.
The question is, do you want to think about that at all in the future? I've had different discussions over my year and a half here with different people. And there's some dump stations that are being considered in other portions of the Five Cities area. I have no idea where one would be located in Oceano, but it would be part of our sewer services. It's within it. Do we want to have it as a future agenda item?
I think we should have it as an agenda item, consider it. Whether or not we approve it is a totally different discussion, or have a place for it is a totally different discussion. But.
Okay. Then the other one that I want to talk about is in the current year budget for our what we generally call our clean and green program, although that's not
our
official.
What?
Our clean and green program, even though that's not an official title to anything. As we all know, we've been doing the garbage enforcement for illegal dumping. And in this year's budget, you allocated funds for signage, public education, and try to do the positive side of encouraging people to not do illegal dumping. Staff and resources, we haven't moved forward with it at all. But I did get contacted from a recent graduate at Cal Poly whose minor included city and regional planning and environmental work, and he's looking for a professional internship. And that's the area where I thought that I met with the individual, thought it would be, you know, a good option. But what it would require is your board's approval of a part-time position.
And what is he going to do?
Well, the idea is develop public outreach information, develop the signage that we would want in order to promote, you know, clean and green and reduce illegal dumping.
I've actually asked quite a few people, you know, when I see where people have dumped, I've asked, why are people doing this? And the same answer is always the same. Waste management is charging way too much money to pick up big items now.
Yeah. So one of the things we would be addressing then, too, is to the extent that we have some funding through our franchise agreement, would there be opportunities to have, like, an incentive for people rather than doing illegal dumping to help reduce the cost associated with one-time pickups? They do twice a year special pickups, and the cost to have large items picked up at the curb twice a year is actually relatively inexpensive as compared to having to drive it out.
$10 per item.
So without getting into the details of how a program might develop, the question is, as far as a future agenda item, a possible part-time person to come in and actually work on trying to move that program forward.
I would be in support of the professional paid volunteer. That's really
I would be in support of putting it on the agenda for the next meeting and so we can further
discuss it.
Discuss it.
Okay.
Fine.
Those were the two future agenda items that I wanted to float out, and we will get them on your agenda at a future.
I have a question. You know the little green buildings that they've got scattered all over the place that you can put clothes
in? Sorry, Lori, we can't hear you.
I'm sorry. The little green boxes that are standing out in front of my place where you go and you stuff clothes or shoes or whatever you want into it. And who do you contact to get a hold of that? There's no phone numbers on it because mine's a disaster. They're pulling stuff out and leaving it all over the place. I keep picking it up, either putting it in garbage or putting it back in.
Actually, somebody's living in yours.
I think so. And there's no phone numbers or any way of contacting.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
The organization. I mean, they're all over the place, but there's not a phone number on one of them.
So maybe we can follow up on that.
Yeah, it's going to grow legs and move to a new location.
Isn't that program that is based?
It's out of Chicago. Isn't
behind?
It?
No, they're behind the Roy Grandy Care Center. They've got a little facility where they invite poor kids in to buy.
That's Children's Resource Network.
That's Children's Resource Center, and they don't do that. So we're going to all try to figure out who owns that box. Does anybody else have anything they want to offer tonight? No public comment? Anything? I'll move to accept a motion to adjourn.
Good night.
Second.
Good night.